From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. All eyes were on Washington yesterday, where former FBI Director James Comey spoke about his firing by Donald Trump in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee.
I was fired in some way to change, or the endeavor was to change the way the Russia investigation was being conducted. That is a very big deal.
A very big deal. Comey is out at the FBI, but his testimony was potent. The president's private attorney called it a vindication for Donald Trump, but it could also be his undoing. This hour on Point, the full implications of yesterday's testimony by ousted FBI Director James Comey. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What did you hear in James Comey's testimony? Did you hear obstruction of justice described in the Oval Office? What questions do you still have? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Devlin Barrett, national security reporter for The Washington Post. He's followed Comey's story and the Russian investigation very closely. Devlin Barrett, great to have you here.
Hi, Tom.
With us from Fairfax, Virginia, is Jonathan Turley, professor of public interest law at the George Washington University. Jonathan Turley, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you.
And with us from Philadelphia is Claire Finkelstein, director of the Center for Ethics and Rule of Law, professor of law and philosophy at the University of Pennsylvania, expert on criminal law and national security. Claire, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
Here was James Comey yesterday. Republican Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas asked if he believed President Trump had colluded with Russia.
It's a question I don't think I should answer in an open setting. As I said, that we didn't. When I left, we did not have an investigation focused on President Trump. But that's a question that'll be answered by the investigation, I think.
And Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia asking the former FBI director if President Trump's actions amounted to obstruction of justice.
Do you believe this will rise to the obstruction of justice?
I don't know. That's Bob Mueller's job to sort that out.
Bob Mueller's job to sort out, and James Comey making clear that he, through his own leak of notes of his conversations with the president, had hoped that a special counsel would be named. That happened. Now we'll see what happens. Claire Finkelstein, jump in here for us. Obstruction of justice at this point seems the more burning question than collusion, at least directly out of Comey's testimony yesterday. Did you hear in James Comey's recounting of his conversations with the president of the United States grounds for pursuit of an obstruction of justice inquiry by the special counsel, Robert Mueller?
Unfortunately, I did, because under 18 U.S.C. 1503, a case of obstruction of justice is made out when a person corruptly or by any threatening communication endeavors to influence, obstruct, or impede the due and proper administration of the law. So this is a pretty a statute that matches the facts pretty closely here, because Comey was being threatened on pain of losing his job. And whether or not the words that the president used said, "I am threatening you," or he made that clear by the context, coupled with the words, "I hope you will drop the investigation into Michael Flynn," he was being threatened and Comey knew it.
James Turley, how do you see that conversation as recounted by the former FBI director?
Well, I come to a different conclusion. I tend to view these things from the perspective of a criminal defense attorney. I think that actually Comey helped himself and hurt himself. I think he would have a hard time being a witness at any trial after his testimony.
Why?
Because, first of all, putting aside the fact that I don't believe this does represent a prima facie case under 1503 or 1505, what Comey described would be just incredibly weak for any type of prosecution. He said that he had a conversation with the president at one point where he told the president he thought that the Russian investigation should be allowed to continue to its natural conclusion. And he said that Trump agreed with that. He also said that Trump only asked if he would see fit to let Michael Flynn go. Trump can easily say that that conversation occurred right after, the day after Flynn was fired, and he was expressing his desire for a former aide. Now, is that appropriate? No. It's wildly inappropriate. But that doesn't make it a crime of obstruction. The biggest problem with Comey is that he also admitted to leaking the FBI memos. And that really damages his credibility. He had a president that asked him for help to try to deal with leaks, and he ultimately became one of the great leakers.
Does that relate in any way to the potential obstruction of justice charge here?
No, it relates to his credibility as a key witness to obstruction. As a defense attorney, I would view him as a target-rich environment, which is different than I did before, because he's a very effective person on the stand. But some of what he said to justify his leaking of the memo doesn't really track very well. I mean, he gave two reasons for it. One is he said he wanted to make sure this evidence got to investigators. That's not persuasive, because obviously the memos would have been acquired by Congress or the federal investigators. He even referred to it as largely evidentiary. And second, he said he wanted to ensure a special counsel. Well, the timing of it really doesn't fit that. At that time, that Monday, all of us were saying that a special counsel seemed inevitable. But more importantly, this helped James Comey more than it did the special counsel. I mean, special counsels don't like stuff like this leak. They prefer to be given the information so they can use it to interview witnesses.
With all due respect,
Claire, yes,
Jonathan, if I can jump in here, I fail to see how the decision that Comey made to send his own personal notes to Dan Richmond at Columbia Law School, knowing that or even requesting, encouraging that they would be passed on to The Washington Post, has anything to do with his credibility. I find that an odd accusation. And there's a kind of
explain
slide
that if
here.
You would, explain that if you would, Diana, because there's been a lot of talk about concern over leaks. And James Comey himself said repeatedly in his testimony yesterday that leaking was not something he looked favorably on. So why wouldn't it go to his credibility?
Well, I'm sorry. I don't know if that was for me.
Yes.
This is not a leak, right? The term leak gets bandied about, but one has to distinguish leaking classified information and just exposing information that is embarrassing to the administration or embarrassing to the president. Comey was very clear that he deliberately included no classified information in his notes so that he could share them. And he, of all people, knows very well what is classified and what's not classified. There's no question there was no classified information in the notes. So it's not really a leak in the sense that there's improper or illegal activity going on in sharing these notes.
Oh, I'm afraid I have to strongly disagree. The FBI has very clear guidelines on the dissemination, not of classified information. It's called the dissemination of FBI information. This idea that leaks are only leaks if they're classified is a new spin in Washington. The FBI guidelines go to FBI information. This was not his personal diary. He wrote this out much like a 302 field report by an agent. It reads just like the 302s I deal with as a defense attorney. He wrote it on a FBI computer. He wrote it concerning a matter under his review as FBI director, a concern about an FBI investigation, and he even refers to it in evidentiary terms. I am 100% certain that the FBI would not take the position that an FBI employee, just by saying that I was addressing it to myself, has free rein to take that material and reveal it to the media. And if this was on the up and up, why do it through a third party where you don't have fingerprints? So you've got the FBI guidelines. You also have Section 641 of the 18 U.S.C. code, which talks about removing material, not classified, government material.
Yeah, Jonathan, Claire, please stand by. Devlin Barrett, please jump in here at the Washington Post, national security reporter there. We've got a lot to look at here, but first, just on the face of it, your national security reporter, you deal in leaks. Was this a leak, in your estimation, as a professional journalist, by the former director of the FBI?
Well, I don't think there's anything illegal about it. I think it's a description of and a conversation between two government officials. That's the kind of thing that, frankly, reporters try to get every day. And, you know, I don't see anything particularly frankly, untoward about doing it. Now, one of the
reporters like leaks, so you wouldn't be opposed.
Of course, we do. I mean, exactly. I mean, I spend literally every day of my career trying to get exactly that sort of information out of people. And I think, frankly, a lot of that more of that information should be in the public, because I think the public
transparency about
should
our
know
government.
How the government actually works. I do think it's interesting, and I think it does highlight something that is frankly not that well understood by the wider public, which is that a lot of information about government activity, not necessarily classified, not necessarily secret, gets to reporters because government employees are worried that the right thing won't be done in X or Y instance. And what Comey describes, from my point of view as a reporter, is almost a classic scenario of, I'm not sure this will be handled correctly, so I'm going to make sure this gets to a reporter one way or another. And lo and behold, after it gets out, in fact, it seems to have played out exactly the way he'd hoped, which is that a special counsel was appointed.
And we're going to come back to this, Devlin, but do you see obstruction of justice as something that Robert Mueller is likely or certain to pursue here? The former FBI director suggested yesterday that he would pick it up.
Not only did the former FBI director suggest that, but the witnesses at the hearing the day previous also suggested that. So I think everyone involved expects that to happen. And I think that's a pretty rational expectation at this point. But, you know, predicting the future is a different job than reporting the present. And I think, you know, this debate over obstruction of justice, while it's certainly good to have lawyers' opinions on this stuff, the thing to remember with the president's conduct, it doesn't matter what, to some degree, what lawyers and prosecutors and grand juries think. It matters what the House of Representatives think.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about testimony yesterday the whole country was watching of former FBI Director James Comey, with Claire Finkelstein at the University of Pennsylvania, Jonathan Turley, George Washington University. Devlin Barrett is with us, national security reporter for The Washington Post, where so many big stories have been broken in this whole chain of events. A kind of culmination, but maybe just a start yesterday in the testimony of James Comey. You can join us this hour. What struck you as most important in Comey's testimony yesterday? Did the day live up to its billing? Epic hearing on the Hill. And you can join us. Can you imagine the president emptying the Oval Office to speak only to you as FBI director and then saying he hoped you would let the Flynn investigation go? Would you have heard that as a wish, a command, a threat? Did you hear obstruction of justice described by the former FBI director, Comey, yesterday on Capitol Hill? Here was Comey saying that the fact that the president emptied the Oval Office before their conversation had his antenna way up.
A really significant fact to me is, so why did he kick everybody out of the Oval Office? Why would you kick the Attorney General, the President, the Chief of Staff out to talk to me if it was about something else? And so that to me, as an investigator, is a very significant fact.
As an investigator, he went on to describe the President saying that he hoped that Comey would let the investigation go, let Michael Flynn go. Comey questioned yesterday on that front by Idaho Republican Senator James Risch, sparring over that choice of words, hope, and what it might have meant.
I took it as a direction.
Right.
I mean, as the President of the United States, with me alone saying, I hope this, I took it as this is what he wants me to do. Now, I didn't obey that, but that's the way I took it.
You may have taken it as a direction, but that's not what he said.
Correct.
He said, I hope.
Those are exact words, okay. Correct.
You don't know of anyone that's ever been charged for hoping something. Is that a fair statement?
I don't as I sit here.
But he came back numerous times to say he took it as a direction. Was that obstruction of justice? He said he would leave it up to the special counsel, Robert Mueller. Here was Comey.
I don't think it's for me to say whether the conversation I had with the president was an effort to obstruct. I took it as a very disturbing thing, very concerning. But that's a conclusion I'm sure the special counsel will work towards to try and understand what the intention was there and whether that's an offense.
Jonathan Turley, is it clear to you that Robert Mueller will work toward an understanding of that it will be part of, maybe even central to, his investigation?
Yes, and I think that's entirely appropriate. I think it's appropriate to investigate the possibility for obstruction. It's just that you don't have a case on these facts. Indeed, these facts come close to what has been rejected by courts in the past. In cases like Higgins, which is often cited, courts have adopted a narrow definition of obstruction specifically to avoid obstruction of an investigation like this one, as opposed to a more classic proceeding. Higgins is followed by a lot of circuits. Even the one circuit that disagrees, the D.C. Circuit, in a case called Kelly, actually said that they agree that you shouldn't use obstruction for a law enforcement investigation. So it'll be hard for Mueller to make it out on these facts, but it's entirely appropriate for him to investigate it.
Claire, do you see the special counsel, the former head of the FBI himself, Robert Mueller, as heading into this looking to potentially justify criminal charges or substantially to lay out potential grounds for impeachment or none of the above?
I think all of the above. There will be almost certainly an investigation by Robert Mueller and by others into whether or not the president obstructed justice, as well as the larger question of the ties that the president's members of the president's inner circle and the Trump campaign had with Russia. And one has to remember that Comey's remarks yesterday are all made in the context of what he knows, both about the president's possible ties with Russia or about his associates' possible ties with Russia that have turned up in the investigation so far that we don't know. And the urgency that he feels to protect the country against the Russian threat, I think, goes some distance to explaining why he sent those notes out.
Can I jump in with one point?
And
because I think Jonathan Turley has made a bunch of good points here, but I think what we're missing is that Comey is not the only witness in any potential obstruction of justice investigation. There are other things that we know of that the president said and did to other people about this investigation.
Like what?
Well, for example, we've reported that he reached out to both the head of the NSA and the director of national intelligence to ask them to publicly state there was no collusion. And we've also reported that he specifically had a similar conversation with the director of national intelligence, Dan Coats, in which he expressed his wish that Coats might intercede with Comey on this whole issue. And so I think while it's obviously important to focus on the conversations Trump had directly with Comey, I don't think we should forget that there may very well be – we know of some other conversations that the president had on this subject, but there may also be other conversations that frankly reflect a pattern. And I think that's a big issue for any investigation that looks at this.
Let's go to our callers.
Just to add to
Claire, please, yes.
I just wanted to add to Devlin's point here. One has to take the statement, I hope you will see your way to dropping the Flynn investigation, in the larger context, not only of the setting and that conversation and the back and forth between Comey and the president, but also the president's own remarks about why he fired James Comey. That the president is doing his own incriminating in his statements that helps us to interpret that statement that he made to Comey. A lot passes implicitly and nonverbally, as well as by the context. And James Comey understood that his job was under threat if he did not drop the investigation into Michael Flynn. That's where the obstruction of justice charge would lie.
And of course, he did lose that job. Lots of callers for all three of you. Stephen in Cape Elizabeth, Maine. Stephen, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I agree with Claire. I think that the president's statement that he hopes that Comey drops the Flynn thing is a veiled threat. I think, as a former New Yorker, what I heard was, if you don't drop it, I would hate to fire you. So I think there was a very clear inference that he would lose his job.
Stephen, I appreciate your call. Jonathan Turley, what about the very fact of this conversation? I mean, you've had Secretary or Speaker Paul Ryan coming out and essentially saying, you know, no, this wasn't good, but the president was new. He didn't really understand. How far outside the boundaries of what has long been considered proper, appropriate presidential behavior is a conversation like this, Jonathan?
It's incredibly far outside the lines. There is no T-ball exception for people who don't get the ethical issues on this stuff. I've been as critical of Trump as I have been of Comey lately, but I've been critical of Trump for some time about his behavior and conduct. But that doesn't make it criminal. I mean, when people talk about his statement that I hope you could drop this, words are important. I know of no case in history where an obstruction prosecution was brought on these types of statements. And any criminal defense attorney will tell you that we have clients all the time that cross the line, that say things to witnesses or mishandle information at the investigation stage. They're never charged with obstruction, particularly because of cases like Higgins. But more importantly, people just disregard what would be easy defenses. You know, Trump would immediately say, look, Comey said later that I agreed that the Russian investigation should continue. Now, you might not believe that statement, but he's recounting conflicting statements. Moreover, if he did say that he wanted these other people to say there was no collusion, Trump can say, look, I was already aware that Comey had said that to Congress, and he obviously had cleared Hillary Clinton publicly. And so what Trump was saying is, why not make what you said to Congress public so at least people will know that there's no evidence of collusion? That's not corruptly influencing. That's a question.
Let me go to Sean in New Haven, Connecticut. Sean, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. I think a lot of attention is being paid to the beginning of Comey quoting Trump in the of letting it go. And the president could have been much more subtle instead of saying letting it go. Letting it go doesn't mean I hope that no wrongdoing is found or I hope that people will be found innocent. It's basically letting it go means asking is that it's going to just be looked over.
Make it go away. Just drop it.
Exactly.
Sean, we've got it. Jonathan, are you saying, are you really making a case about criminal charges here? What about the impeachment path? If this is way outside the boundaries of appropriate presidential behavior, putting this kind of comment to the director of the FBI in private, one-on-one, is that sufficient? Does that fall under the high crimes and misdemeanors impeachment rubric?
Yeah, I hate to be a buzzkill, but no. I was the last lead counsel on an impeachment trial in the U.S. Senate. I represented Judge Porteous. My opposing counsel was Adam Schiff, who's a very effective
California, right in the middle
prosecutor.
Of things.
Yeah. And I assume Adam would agree that this falls short. People make references to the Nixon and Clinton articles of impeachment. If they look at the actual articles, they'll see why. Nixon was, in fact, had Article 1, which was an obstruction count, but it was incredibly detailed with 9 clearly defined crimes. It was anchored in a break-in in Watergate, a slush fund, procuring false testimony. That's the type of obstruction that leads to impeachment. As for Clinton, people keep on referring to Article 4. Article 4 was rejected. He wasn't ultimately impeached on Article 4.
Claire, are you making an argument here for a criminal path of pursuit here, or simply a less perhaps exacting impeachment path, or both, or neither?
I do think there's a criminal case of obstruction of justice that the entire pattern of behavior makes out. But I agree with Jonathan in the sense that I don't think there's going to be the political will to impeach President Trump on the basis of this alone. What I think may ultimately lead to impeachment is when Robert Mueller's investigation concludes, as well as other investigations that are going on, about the degree of collusion or potential collusion between potentially President Trump himself and Russia. That's where I think we really have to keep our eyes on that, because that's what's most dangerous for the country, right? It's possible to fire the FBI director and the work of the FBI will still go on. But what's really got us at risk here is that we have a president who is unable to protect the country from an extremely dangerous adversary and who denies the danger associated with that adversary. That's what one has to identify as a potential very serious problem for President Trump.
Devlin Barrett, please come in on that, because there were things that could have seemed contradictory yesterday in what Comey had to say. He was very clear on the scale of what he described as this foreign Russian threat to American democratic process, that is, right, the voting process. At the same time, he was quite tough in, debunking a New York Times story that pointed at collusion that appeared earlier this year and really stirred the pot on this. So what was Comey saying there? Was he saying, yes, there was Russian interference, but no, he didn't see evidence of collusion? Or is that too crisp a way of putting it?
I think he's trying, admittedly, subtly and implicitly, because so much of this information is classified. I think he is trying to communicate to the public that this is a very serious investigation, it's a serious issue, and there is reason to be concerned. I was really struck by an answer he gave later in the hearing to a question about Clinton email, of all things, where a Republican lawmaker asked him during the Clinton email investigation, when issues came up that brought the question of Loretta Lynch's impartiality in play, he was asked, well, why didn't you seek a special counsel then? And he said, because when the public hears special counsel, they say, aha, there's something serious here. Now, he's talking about Clinton email, but remember what he did. He took significant measures on his own to try and force the government, after he's been fired, to create a special counsel. So if you follow Comey's own logic, he believes there's something serious here and something that needs to – that and there's serious cause for concern here. So I think he doesn't want to say it outright because there's an ongoing investigation. He's not in the government anymore and this stuff is classified. But I think a lot of his body language and frankly some of his actual language indicates the degree of concern he has about this notion of Russian collusion.
Ken in Rapid City, South Dakota. Thank you for calling, Ken. You're on the air.
Hi. Everyone seems very preoccupied with obstruction of justice, but I wonder if there's ground for treason and inaction when all of the agencies are telling him that Russia was involved in our election and he's not doing anything to pursue that. And I'm just thinking, like, if I was to witness a murder and I did nothing, that I would be brought up on charges.
So look first at Russian interference, you say, Ken, from South Dakota, and we'll take that. We'll look at it. One more right here, Columbus, Georgia. David, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Setting aside the obstruction of justice and the leaks for just a moment, one thing I heard that I think is very telling to the character of the president is that he didn't ever ask Comey, let's get to the bottom of this investigation. Other than his comment about the satellite people, it doesn't seem like the president is genuinely concerned that the United States is, for lack of a better term, under attack from a foreign power trying to influence our elections. That should be a nonpartisan issue, as Comey said yesterday, and it's troubling.
And Comey, right up front on that front, no bones about it. Here he was before the committee. David, thanks for your call. Here's James Comey yesterday.
There should be no fuzz on this whatsoever. The Russians interfered in our election during the 2016 cycle. They did it with purpose. They did it with sophistication. They did it with overwhelming technical efforts. And it was an active measures campaign driven from the top of that government.
Jonathan Turley, you're the legal scholar here, along with Claire Finkelstein. Is this issue a legal issue or a political issue or both, Russian interference?
It's a political issue. With regard to Ken's statement about treason, it's not treason, but it can go to how you view the president's conduct. It is a bipartisan effort. Both Republicans and Democrats are cooperating fully, I think, in investigating the Russian interference. That's separate, really, from the questions of indictment or impeachment. I also want to note, though, I've always been surprised by how people are outraged by this. The country that has distinguished itself the most in interfering in the elections of other countries is the United States of America. We really set the gold standard. We have not only intervened in other elections, we've overthrown government, and just recently we even hacked the emails of our allies, including Merkel.
Does that mean, I mean, there is the history, but should the U.S. roll over when it happens here in the heart of our democratic process?
No, it shouldn't. It's just that the hypocrisy in Washington on this is really stifling. All of these senators were fully aware of our own efforts to intervene in other countries.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron. Blue Apron partners with sustainable farms, fisheries, and ranchers to bring you everything you need to create incredible home-cooked meals. Ingredients come pre-measured, so there's no food waste, and it's delivered right to your door. Rediscover how fun cooking can be while enjoying seasonally inspired recipes and exploring new flavors and cuisines. No commitment. Get the meals only when you want. Get your first three Blue Apron meals free, plus free shipping, by visiting blueapron.com/OP.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the testimony yesterday of former FBI Director James Comey and the questions raised on obstruction of justice, the president's handling of the truth, Russia, Michael Flynn, Comey's leak, and what happens now. Claire Finkelstein is with us from the University of Pennsylvania. Jonathan Turley is here from George Washington University. Devlin Barrett is with us, national security reporter for The Washington Post, where there have been so many news breaks on this story. You can join us. What do you think? Trump's tweeting today. The president is tweeting complete vindication. What do you say? And how does it feel to hear the former FBI director say that the White House, the president, lies? What about Comey's leak? And do you see impeachable offenses here? Do you see criminal offenses? Do you see a nothing burger, as Donald Trump Jr. says? What comes after Comey and his testimony? President Trump not saying much yesterday about Comey's testimony, but his son, Donald Trump Jr., appeared on Fox News Hannity last night to talk about the Russia probe.
This has been a 10-month witch hunt. This is the only thing that they had on Trump. This is what they did to distract him from being able to get the stuff done that he was elected to ultimately do. And I think now that this is all past, he can go back to doing what he promised he was going to do. There's no clouds. There's nothing getting in his way. They can't be obstructionist.
Nothing in his way. Blue sky all the way in front of him. But James Comey describing yesterday himself sitting with the president of the United States in the Oval Office that had been cleared by that president, alone with the president, and not trusting the president to tell the truth about the conversation. Here he was.
First, I was alone with the president of the United States, or the president-elect, soon to be president. The subject matter, I was talking about matters that touch on the FBI's core responsibility and that relate to the president, president-elect, personally. And then the nature of the person. I was honestly concerned that he might lie about the nature of our meeting, and so I thought it really important to document.
The president, a liar. The White House responded to that yesterday. This was spokeswoman Sarah Sanders.
No, I can definitively say the president's not a liar. And I think it's frankly insulting that that question would be asked.
Let's go to Tom in Hartford, Connecticut. Tom, thank you for calling. You are on the air.
Hey, so the thing that really struck me is the most substantial thing that happened yesterday was the silence coming out of Trump's Twitter account. Because that you would think would be going off the wall. And it was completely dead the whole time. It sounded as if, you know, they might be scared or maybe at least on their heels.
Well, maybe his staff had him handcuffed in the back of the White House. I mean, we know that they're not always happy with the president's tweets.
Maybe that's the case. Having said all that, on this whole thing, hearing a lot of the politicians and the pundits and whatnot trying to figure out the future, I think Democrats are really overplaying their hand on this, and they just need to be smart and let, like Comey said, let the investigation carry it out. Stop trying to predict the future, because they're going to end up shooting themselves in the foot.
Devlin Barrett, could you describe for us what you expect at this point from the investigations in the House, the Senate, and from Robert Mueller? We know you can't say what the outcome will be, but what just procedurally, with this testimony now behind us, what do you anticipate from these three? And if there are others looking in here, tell us.
Well, it's a great riddle to try to solve, because if you think about the way investigations normally work, when the Congress is interested in something that the Justice Department is investigating, what tends to happen is Congress basically takes a back seat and sits around and waits until DOJ has completed its work, whether that's charges or not charges or whatever. The lawmakers are often trailing partners.
You mean
in this
they'll
process.
Wait for Robert Mueller at this point? Is that
no,
what that
well,
means? Or
but here's where it gets tricky, right? Because in this
DOJ?
Instance, this is such a politically loaded question.
Yeah.
It's such an explosive issue that there's a lot of demand that lawmakers simply not sit around and wait to find out what Robert Mueller tells them happened. And so I
when people are saying that could be a year or more before he comes out with a report.
It could be multiple years. I mean, this stuff is complicated, and a lot of it's classified, and it will take presumably some time to sort through. But I think you're already seeing that the committees do not intend to take a complete backseat on this. They're already trying to set up interviews with witnesses who we know are related to the investigation. So I think there is a real question here about how much are we going to see sort of a public and political investigation, and how much are we will that affect the private, secret criminal investigation that's frankly going on right now.
Mueller famously tight-lipped, and Comey saying yesterday, you will not have leaks from the Mueller investigation. That could be a year or more, multiple years, as you say, in a black box. In the meantime, maybe the congressional committees move forward. But with what intent, Devlin? To reveal or to conceal? To reveal or bury?
Well, I think everyone hopes that it will be reveal. But I think one of the things that I think both the Clinton email investigation show and certainly the Trump-Russia investigation show, that when you mix intelligence and national security with politics, that is a very toxic combination in some ways, because people within the government start to distrust each other and become suspicious of each other's motives. You've already seen that on the House Intelligence Committee. So far, the Senate Intelligence Committee has done a better job of avoiding those sort of public fights and accusations. But that tension, that suspicion, and that concern, I think, is going to keep playing out as we go through this.
James Comey saying yesterday that it felt like a test of his loyalty, that his job hung on his answers to the president.
I got the sense my job would be contingent upon how he felt I conducted myself and whether I demonstrated loyalty.
New Orleans, Louisiana, Eric is calling. Hi, Eric, you're on the air.
Hi. Republicans on the Hill seem to be hanging their hats on whether or not things are technically illegal, going so far as to use the president's ignorance as an excuse for unethical behavior. And I'm wondering if they're setting a new standard of ethics and morality for the Republican Party right now, and whether this is going to hang around their necks for a while. I wonder if the panel could speak to that.
Claire, do you want to talk about ethics, morality, or just law?
All three. Let me first go back to the question that you asked right before the last break, which was whether or not is this Russia stuff just a political issue or is it a legal issue? And Jonathan Turley said it was just a political issue. And I want to highlight my disagreement with that.
Okay.
When we have criminal investigations going on all over the place, in particular Michael Flynn, not to mention Paul Manafort, Carter Page, these are former very close associates of the president or of candidate Trump. Obviously, Michael Flynn was the former national security advisor. And when you have a criminal investigation into the ties between people at that level and their proximity to the president, the president's lawyers have got to be worried about possible conspiracy or complicity charges that the president could be ultimately held responsible for. So one way to understand what happened with the firing of James Comey is that if the president had any awareness of the political firestorm that was going to produce, worrying about obstruction of justice was actually the least of his worries, because the possibility of having him implicated in the Flynn investigation was much more serious.
Well, Tom, if I could clarify one point,
Jonathan?
On that, and that is, I was actually responding to the caller who asked if it was a treasonous offense for, and specifically the failure of the president to take the allegations of Russian interference seriously. That's a political question. There's no question there's collateral criminal stuff here, but there's also not a crime of collusion. People talk about collusion like there is a provision in the 18 U.S.C. code on collusion.
You're not saying collusion didn't happen or did, just that it's not a criminal action. Is that right? You can, if a presidential campaign would collude with a foreign government to interfere in U.S. elections, there's no criminal bar to that?
The criminal element comes with the specific acts that are taken through collusion.
Now, well, not to mention conspiracy. Not
right,
to mention conspiracy, Jonathan. I mean, we do have to be clear about this, because he could be guilty of conspiracy to interfere with the U.S. election without actually having accomplished that interference.
What would that require?
I don't actually think there's a crime to fit that. I mean, people have talked about conspiracy to hack a system, which I don't think makes much sense. The crime of Michael Flynn, that is the only one that is clearly defined, is a violation of FARA, which is the Foreign Agents Registration Act,
yes,
which is almost uniformly not prosecuted. There's been about seven cases since the act was rewritten.
I beg to differ, because he's also being investigated for espionage, as far as we know. So whether or not the president could ultimately held to be complicit or to be a co-conspirator in espionage is an extremely serious question, one that goes well beyond obstruction of justice.
Could we back up for a moment to James Comey was talking about how awkward it was for him that one of his first or his first real interaction with President-elect Trump was this meeting in Trump Tower where he and I think other intelligence chiefs had to lay out the contents of this dossier that we've heard about in these marginal kinds of ways, but the alleged what's cavorting by Donald Trump with Russian prostitutes and all this. Trump denies it, and we don't know, but that's out there, and he had to brief the president about the existence of this. And it was in that context yesterday that he said, "We're not personally investigating you, Mr. President." I want to just listen to James Comey on that front for a moment. Here we are.
I didn't want him thinking that I was briefing him on this to sort of hang it over him in some way. I was briefing him on it because we had been told by the media it was about to launch. We don't want to be keeping that from him. And if there was some, he needed to know this was being said. But I was very keen not to leave him with an impression that the Bureau was trying to do something to him. And so that's the context in which I said, "Sir, we're not personally investigating you."
Devlin Barrett, a couple of things here. First, what an awkward way to get to know a president-elect with that kind of really seamy material. I'm not saying that it's true or not true, but just there it was. But secondly, that's where he gets into this, "We're not investigating you." And this is the thing that Donald Trump came back, of course, and said very loudly weeks ago now that he was told repeatedly by James Comey that he was not under investigation. So two questions. First, that dossier, does that remain an active issue here? Is that something that Mueller and or the committees will look at? And secondly, James Comey said again yesterday, he said yesterday that he told the president he was not under investigation. What are the boundaries of that assertion? What does that mean? That he wasn't then? That he never would be? How significant is that?
I think that whole first meeting is very significant on a number of levels. And as far as the dossier goes, my understanding is that it's not a completely dead letter at this point. But what they've found as they've gone through it is there are some things that they can confirm. There are some things that they're pretty sure did not happen. And there's a third category of things that in their minds they will probably never know one way or another whether they happened. But what has been said to me a number of times is that whatever may ultimately be confirmable about what's in the dossier, and there's a whole range of stuff in there. Like people remember the lurid things, but there's a whole range of different things alleged in there.
But things that would, if true, would appear to give Russia potentially leverage over a sitting president of the United States.
Well, some of those things certainly, but I think what's interesting in my mind is that a number of folks have said to me, "Look, at the end of the day, this will not rise or fall with the dossier. That is." To some degree, a historical piece of this, but not the thing that is driving this investigation.
And the repeated assertions that, "Mr. President, you are not under investigation." So what does that mean now?
Well, look, I think obviously a lot has happened since then, for one thing. I also think it raises a really interesting question, which is, did Comey make a mistake in being the one who one-on-one told Trump about the dossier? Did that initial conversation on that initial subject so sour and polarize these two people that they could never get in a good place after that? I think,
if I could jump in here,
yes, sure.
Devlin, it might have done the opposite, right? Because when Trump said we had that thing,
that thing, right? Everyone wants to know what that thing is.
Everybody wants to know what that thing is, but he may have taken the willingness of James Comey to clue him into the existence of this Steele dossier, as kind of a signal that he was willing to collaborate with him. And so from the president's standpoint, hey, you're betraying me. We had that thing, you know. We were going to
totally
be buddies around this.
Although I do think that I agree, the thing conversation is interesting. That's the reason I've been equally critical of Trump and Comey. Mm. I don't think Comey's record in this is that good.
Meaning what, Jonathan?
Well, when he's had serious ethical issues confront him, he really hasn't done that much. You know, he talks about Loretta Lynch telling him, don't use the word investigation with Hillary Clinton, say a matter.
Yes.
And I remember when he said in that press conference, I turned to someone and said, what the heck is a matter? What was he talking about?
Yep.
And instead of telling the Attorney General, I'm going to call it an investigation because it is. And the same thing with going to Trump to tell him, you know, you don't have to worry about the dossier or not confronting him on these moments. It does make him look more like an operator. You know, he said, I don't want to look like J. Edgar Hoover, but there are moments where he doesn't exactly look that great either.
Operator toward what end, Jonathan, if that's the characterization?
Well, I think Comey wanted to stay as director. I think he did want to develop some type of a rapport with Trump. I think that he has tended to be a Washington operator. He's tended to try to avoid confrontations, to sort of thread the needle. But I think that that went too far. That's the same reason why I feel that his leaking of these memos went too far. You know, he says, I don't want to be like J. Edgar Hoover to have these memos. But then he admits he tried to engineer a special counsel and leaked it through a friend of his in Colombia. I mean, those things don't really track very well.
Yeah, if I could jump on that, I hate to agree with Jonathan Turley, but I have to say
there are some
inappropriate things here. And the biggest mistake that I think Comey made, which he himself seems to recognize, is that in that famous conversation in which Trump asked him to drop the Flynn investigation, he should have said, are you asking me or are you ordering me? What exactly is your intent here? Because you understand my investigation has to be independent of your wishes. And he did not clarify that.
Devlin Barrett, our time is short. The testimony yesterday, does it leave the president in a better or worse position?
Worse.
Because?
Because he repeatedly called the president a liar. He repeatedly said the White House had been lying. You know, those things will stick even if people forget the particulars.
Very grateful to all three of you for helping us probe here. And we will, of course, all be watching. Devlin Barrett, national security reporter with The Washington Post. Thank you very much for being with us today, Devlin.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Claire Finkelstein, University of Pennsylvania, Center for Ethics and Rule of Law. Claire, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Jonathan Turley at George Washington University. Always great to have you. Thank you very much for being with us today, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for all your calls and comments. We'll be right here. We'll be right on it. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.